evening world.
And good evening world. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Jan.
Here we are again at Live from Ordinary Miracles.
And we're very unscripted tonight. Our guest is under the weather, and so we're going to invent our own weather.
Uh-huh.
What's our theme for tonight,
Jan? Journey Harrison. Hi, Journey, my dear friend, Journey, the healing practitioner from Gardnerville, Nevada, has come down with a sore throat. So we have rescheduled Journey for December 5th. And I'd like to say hello to any of my students at the psychoacoustics, my sound healing students who would be tuning in tonight to hear about Journey's work. But we do have a wonderful guest tonight. We have Lisa Jorgensen, an amazing Renaissance woman from Silverton, Oregon, who's into many things, and we will be discussing her life process through the theme of our show tonight, which is defining moments. Would you like to speak a little bit about defining moments? Just
well, when I was much younger, I realized that there were times where something that happened in a split second changed the course of my life. And I've enjoyed the stories that have come from each of them. I've identified about five of them. If I still have them.
I bet you have those right in your pocket, right?
There they are. There's actually, five defining moments that changed my life.
All right. We'll hold on to that, yeah. I think it's going to be fun to see that. So we'll have a great time tonight. And I would like for our guests to call in and talk to us about your amazing, maybe looking back, it was a miraculous moment. At the time, it didn't seem so miraculous. May have seemed absolutely a catastrophe. Call us in at 877-876-5227. Toll-free numbers are, I'll say that again, 877-876-5227. Well, Matt, let's just introduce ourselves a little bit in case we have some new viewers tonight.
Yeah, who are we and what the heck are we doing here?
Yeah, what's the point, right?
So we're sitting in a little store in downtown Cotati, California, about an hour north of San Francisco. The store is called Ordinary Miracles, and it's part health clinic and part chocolate boutique, and occasionally it's also a little music concert room.
So, you've got all the right things covered.
Things I enjoy.
Song, chocolate, there's only one thing missing, right?
My wife.
No. Well, she does work in the back. She's a naturopath, and actually last week we interviewed Treya Palmer. That was really great, great interview.
Keeps me healthy.
She or the chocolate or the music?
All three.
I love it. That's great.
And basically the show is loosely structured around concepts of sound and healing because Jan does something called voice bio. And I do something called voice mapping, and they both use the frequencies of the human voice in kind of biofeedback processes. And the result is often some pretty amazing healing for people. So anybody has any questions, call us up, and then we'll know what to talk about by your questions.
Our show is from Live from Ordinary Miracles, and Matt and I think that miracles should be an ordinary thing in our everyday process.
Well, they are.
They absolutely, there you go, jumping. It's that quantum thinking, Matt, yeah.
Yep.
And a couple of weeks ago, we actually did some songwriting. And last week after the show, we sat down and we actually wrote a beautiful little melody. So perhaps next week we'll unwrap it. We have a song, Live from Ordinary Miracles, so that we can, you know, bring the joy of that music through the name of our show. So I'm Jan Sircone. I live here in Sonoma County. My business is Music for Joy and Healing. I have a healing clinic at my home, and I work with people through a cutting-edge technology tool which shows that your voice can heal you. I've been a singing teacher, a singing registered nurse, and putting those two together through the voice bio, I can actually show a person the frequencies in their body, that they're actually musical, harmonic, vibrating beings, show them the imbalances in their body through their voice, and how they can sing to reheal themselves. My website is musicforjoyandhealing.com. And when you go on, you're going to hear me singing. So Actually, the CD that came on with the opening of our show is a project that I just did, and it's a healing CD. It's As Above, So Below, and that was a song dedicated to the Pleiades. It's called Seven Sisters, and Eric Bates was the guitarist, Randy Masters was the music director, and I sang on that, and you can get that at CD Baby. Let's tell us how they can contact you, Matt.
Well, my website's fairly easy to remember. It's mattkramer.com, mattkramer.com. And that's the gateway for a number of things I do. I do mediation and conflict resolution, and I do photography. And also you'll see a link on there to voice mapping. And voice mapping uses the frequencies in your voice, which are a gateway to buried emotions and, in some cases, traumatic history that still impacts us. And by about feedback process, taking frequencies in your voice and feeding them back to you, it helps unlock, release those memories so they no longer impact you. That's the elevator speech.
And actually, a lot of times, when I do the voice bio, I'm able to identify when people have overriding frequencies in their body related to emotional constructs, and they block up the channels of our body, and they inhibit some of our natural flow and functional ways of being and interacting in the world and creating what we want. So I send people over to Matt. And actually, our guest tonight, Lisa, I was having a talk with her earlier, and she said, sign me up. We actually share the same parents. I have to say my maiden name is Jorgensen, and I was honored to be Lisa Jorgensen's sister for this many years. And she...
Okay, so Lisa and I will go do a voice mapping session. You can finish the radio show.
Okay, sounds good. All right. So, Matt, we have our little structure here. I know our viewers who check in regularly with us want to know what was the best thing that happened to you today and the worst thing. We feel that kind of covers the whole gamut. So,
well, your phone call actually caught me in the middle of the best thing that happened today. Ordinary Miracles is part of a piece of property that belongs to a community of 30 families called Frog Song. It's Frog Song Co-Housing. And for those of you who haven't heard of co-housing, that's a situation when you and your future neighbors get together with an architect and you design your village together. And today we celebrated the fourth anniversary of the founding of Frog Song, and we call it Hearth Day. And we had a wonderful dinner together, members of the community, and we had some readings, and then we did a candlelight walk around the community, which really is neat, kind of scares the neighbors every year when we do that. And then we were just sitting in a circle and sharing what is our Frog Song moment of the year.
Frog Song moment, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, for one of the folks shared the fact that on their way to Europe, they knew that somebody else in the community was flying home from someplace, so they drove one car 60 miles from Frog Song to San Francisco Airport and left that car, and then the neighbor was able to take that car and come back home.
Wow.
And that's one little example of, you know, a community working together, cooking together, watching each other's kids, raising some beautiful organic, it was a totally organic permaculture environment. So the best thing today was our celebration that, you know, about 54 adults, about 25 kids, basically all getting along, you know, and wonderfully enjoying each other. And whatever conflicts we do have are educational. We learn from those conflicts. We actually get become deeper friends as a result.
That's a huge best thing.
Thank you.
I believe that that's where we're all headed, that paradigm that you're already living. So thank you for being the model for that. Did you say your worst thing already? Oh, it's when I called you to pull you away from that.
I guess in the middle of the quiet group of 40-something people when my cell phone rang.
Oh, no. Oh, you didn't have it on vibration? Well,
I thought I did.
Well, I was standing in front of the store waiting for the show to start, and I was getting a little anxious. So my worst thing happened, that the words to the song that I was going to present tonight fell somewhere. So as we're getting ready for the show, and they're counting down 10, 9, 8, I realize I do not have the words for my song.
Do you remember one line?
I am the woman. I am the flow. I am the ocean. Hear what I know. So we'll save that for next week. It's a beautiful song about the healing of the divine feminine.
Did we write that last week?
The waters. No, that's my song.
Oh, okay.
That came to me. Gardening one day, and it is a very rich, beautiful song. However, what we're learning now is to throw away our little structure and plans and the list. And the joyful, exciting things happen right in the moment. So I turned to my sister, and she said, whoa, where's the script? I said, no script, honey. We are living in the moment now. And all of our listeners, I'm sure, are quite aware that the ways that we live, the way we plan and scripted our lives, we're having those defining moments now. And the whole thing is to breathe and surrender. With that in mind, that's going to lead me into sharing with you. I get these mailings, I tell you, clogs at my email, but this is an extra good one. The energies for October 2007. This is Archangel Michael through Celia Fenn, a wonderful channeler. The awakening of the planetary heart and ascension to new earth consciousness. Some of you may get this, but I'm just going to talk a little bit about what's happening here planetarily, because I think it leads right into our topic tonight, defining moments, life-changing decision moments. Did you see that movie with Gwyneth Paltrow where the sliding
doors? Yeah.
Yes. Oh, gosh, where she was living parallel realities. That says it all. You never know when you're going to look back and that little road is dropping out underneath you and you're going to end up in a whole new place. Okay, here we go. For indeed, dearest ones, it is the time of the awakening of the planetary heart and the awakening of our own deep heart energies as the point where the personal and planetary energies integrate and converge. As you awaken to the twin flame within you, so the planet awakens to the pure consciousness of the Christ, Divine Masculine, Magdalena, Divine Feminine. And so it is achieved. A friend of mine said that so much is happening this fall, it's the birth, September, October, November, that by Christmas we will all be transformed. And I do feel that we're going through these layers rather quickly here. Balance will be achieved and you will be gradually begin to see this new light manifesting in the form of the planet. So the energies in October. The focus points of this shift into the new matrix in October will be around the full moon on the 26th of October. What I usually do is mark my calendar, so I'm just aware of these little changes. On the 27th and the 28th of October, Pluto will be exactly on the galactic center in relation to the Earth. This alignment of moon energy with Pluto and the great central sun will create a powerful surge of solar divine feminine energy that will integrate and unite with the divine masculine in a powerful manifestation of the twin flame. For the twin flame is you. You are bearer of the God codes, and the central point of union of the twin flames or current of source energy. You are the earth awakening to full conscious. So I think that's a nice way to set up our talk for tonight.
And for those scientists that say Pluto's not a planet, that'll show them.
That's great. That's good. So, did you want to say a little bit more about defining moments before I introduce my lovely sister?
Oh, like to share a couple of them?
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, because when she starts talking, she's my big sister. I know. She can hold the field.
Well, I thought I would just... one of the things I enjoy about this show is dichotomy, where Jan and I are sort of yins and yangs type of thing. And so she's reading a piece of poetry, and I'm going, okay, what can I have? All I can remember is a Shel Silverstein poem, about four lines long. So for the sake of reading some poetry, it's an anteater, the pet man told my dad. But really, it was an aunt eater, and my uncle's really mad.
That's good. That's good, Matt. You're good. And the delivery is very good, too. Okay. Did you want to share some of your...
Well, I'm trying to see which defining moment. Well, how many minutes do I have to talk about defining moments?
Let's see. Oh, I'm in charge of that? Oh, good. Well, I know. You wrote in your bio that the thing you hate is to be interrupted, and that is my most difficult thing in the world. So I'm going to give you some boundaries here. The feminine is telling you, You've got 3.2 minutes, Matt. Go.
Okay, so I won't tell my best story, but that's okay. Okay, I'll tell the story about how I came to mediation.
Okay.
A defining moment. I used to manage a songwriter back in the late 80s, early 90s. And one day she mentioned to me that she was going through a fourth divorce. But this time, she was seeing a mediator instead of a lawyer. I said, what does that mean? She goes, well, it's cheaper, it's faster, and I can stay friends with my husband. I thought, well, that's pretty cool. I remembered that about a year later when I was dating somebody I really liked, and I thought it was a great relationship, and we had a horrible fight. And I said, let's go see my client's mediator. And we did. And we were sitting with the mediator, mediation starts, and about a half hour into it, I realized, wow, I'm not feeling defensive. I'm not feeling bad. My girlfriend looks like she's doing okay. We're getting to understand each other a bit. This thing really works. And I asked the mediator, this is really cool. Can I do this? And she said, of course. And she turned me on to her mentor, who became my mentor, a man named Ken Cloak. And so having a fight with my girlfriend changed my life, and now I'm a professional mediator 15 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So, how's that defining moment?
That's a strong one. Let me share a couple of mine. I wanted so badly to go to nursing school, and the first time I applied, they said, no, you don't have the full requirements. And I was devastated, and I realized it was a small error. And I remember the day sitting on the steps at my mother's house opening the letter of acceptance. I knew that I was going to be in the career that I was meant to do, and I was so thrilled. That deep feeling of being filled with your sole purpose. Huge, huge change for me. The next time I had a defining moment, I was raising my daughter, and she was about 11 and had a history of severe mental illness. And I always felt, how could a child be so difficult? And one day, this was the beginning of my path and my spiritual path and working with the energies and the light. I was holding her the way that the institutions has taught me to do to protect myself. And I said, may the light of God shine on this child. And suddenly she reared her head back, her eyes turned black, and she started foaming at the mouth and speaking like a demonic adult. And at that point, I said, there's other elements and other dimensions here that I need to deal with. So that actually was a gift, and she's completely healed now. It turned out to be a simple metabolic disorder. And that was a defining moment for me to say.
Let me clarify something.
Yes.
You said she had mental illness, but she really didn't. What she had was...
She did not. She was shifted because of her food intake was creating where she could not hold on to her soul and her mental processes. It was actually, she had severe food allergies as well as a metabolic disorder deep in her system. It was the methylionate amino acid processing disorder, mm-hmm. very rare. So they branded her as autistic, pervasive developmental disorder, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I knew she was well sometimes and not well other times. So we tried every therapy. So it wasn't until that moment that I saw that, you know, something else that was hitchhiking in her, and that I saw as she got better, she was able to hold her own field and processes. And that taught me how to work with clients for clearing and purification of their own fields, particularly with diet. And that relates to the voice bio work I do as well.
So your daughter should get a royalty for your work?
No, actually, I would love to pay for her college with, yeah, the book that I've written about her, Kelly song. Oh, we have a call here. Ah, yes.
Hello?
Hello, hi.
Hello from Gilbert, Arizona.
Well, hello, and welcome to our show.
Yes, and I have you wanted us to share small little things?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, well, this is kind of silly, but it's important to my 7-year-old son. He loves Corvettes, and he loves to look all around when we're driving and look for Corvettes. Today we had a magical day. We saw 8 Corvettes when we were out about town. Now, what are the odds of that?
Wow. Now, what did you see?
Those Corvette shows? The Corvettes, the car?
Oh, his favorite thing?
Pardon?
So you're saying that he saw a Corvette?
Eight Corvettes.
Speak up just a little bit. We can't quite hear you.
Okay. Well, what was really odd about today is that he saw eight Corvettes when we're out and about. We always count every day when we go in the car.
Eight Corvettes.
And, yes.
Well,
eight. Isn't
that something? He's a little miracle maker, isn't he? And eight is a very powerful manifestation number as well.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, he's seven, and as I say, he's just really crazy about this stuff, so we laughed all the way home, and I'm not sure where the magic is, but there was something magic that we could see eight, so there you go.
Well, listen, since we have you on the line, can you share with us a defining moment in your life where you stepped across the line and you knew your life would never be the same?
Oh, my goodness, where I knew it would never be the same.
Outside of a marriage or something.
Oh,
just
okay.
Something
well,
spirit dropped
I
life.
Could tell you something physical.
Okay.
After I had an emergency surgery, it's really interesting. When I came out of that, it's as if somebody had come in and dumped all my old emotional baggage. I was able to dump a lot of emotional baggage after that surgery. Now, to me, that's the defining moment. It was as if with the anesthesia, it was all cut off.
So perhaps something about that disorder was creating a dissonant field in you, and once that was cleared, you were able to have your pranic tube more flowing and clear. Amazing.
Yes, I think so. And, you know, I had some real dark, you know, memories, events, that it just seemed as if an umbilical cord was cut. As if my sins were purged, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And please call us back another time. We really enjoyed hearing, especially your son's magical story.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We enjoyed having you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so we'll move along. I have one more thing to tell our viewers. Sometimes the moment of destiny comes when you have the courage to bubble up and to face the truth and to share a communication with someone that you know could be life-changing. For instance, well, I'll tell you, if you were to look at your spouse and to say something along this line, picture yourself driving down a country road, you look over, and you see that you're in your little sports car with the woman you love and you want to spend the rest of your life with. Is it me? It takes a lot of courage to know that you can accept whatever the answer is. And I would have to say that was me. That was the beginning of my divorce process when my husband said, no, it's not you. But that was the beginning of the real authentic communication. So sometimes the defining moments have to come within us to really push the truth out, come out of that space of holding it in and insulation, being afraid to know the truth. Did you want to say anything more, Matt, before we introduce Lisa? Did that bring up anything for you these last?
I think we should introduce Lisa.
Let's move on. Okay. Lisa Jorgensen grew up in a family of 10, Irish Catholic, on Endicott Street in San Leandro, California. Now, I happen to observe her many life choices and processes from an interesting viewpoint in the, you know, the henpecking order as a younger sister. She was 4 years older than me, and I idolized her. She was the cheerleader, smart. She's the one where I would go into the class and the teachers would say, oh, you're Lisa's sister. You must be good at artwork. Here, do this project. I'd say, no. You must be good at sewing. No. You must be good at cheerleading. No, that's not my thing either. I was good at other things, but Lisa was a perfectionist and did well in all that she did. She became a stewardess. She became an excellent seamstress. She's the one who, at the Portland Opera, Shakespeare Festival, would make the Queen's costume to exact specification. She's worked at Beach Bank at Babylon, made fabulous outfits, heavily beaded. Her path then took her to, and I should probably let her fill this in, but she now is the tailor at the top of the hill at a monastery in Mount Angel, Oregon. So Lisa, What were some of your major defining moments? How have you maneuvered the canoe through your life? And tell us where you're at. Just a real-life person here sharing from her heart. Welcome, Lisa.
Hello. Well, actually, you asked several questions there. Where should I start?
You choose.
How did I end up at the top of the hill in Mount Angel, Oregon, a Benedictine monastery, after such an irreverent feminist life? Defining moments. I had been working in costuming and theater up and down the West Coast for many years, and I went freelance, did very well, and then all of a sudden the jobs began drying up. People canceled contracts, and I thought, there's something going on here. And I got the intuitive message that I think the work is going away because I'm supposed to make my life very quiet now so that I can hear whatever message is coming my way. This was all very intuitive. I had, and strange, I had no idea what this meant, but I refinanced my home so that I could take a full year off. And I spent that year doing very quiet, introspective things, gardening, quilting, and reading. At the end of the year, I thought, well, my spiritual year is up. What should I do now? And I went to a cocktail party given by a friend of mine.
That sounds perfect. When in doubt,
have a drink and think it over. At this party, a friend I hadn't seen in many months came up to me, and she was laughing, and she said, I have found the job for you. I saw an ad in a paper. There's a bunch of monks that need someone to make their habits. And she continued laughing, and at that moment, for the second time in my life, I received what I believe is a message.
And she thought she was joking with you.
She thought she was. It was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
But at that moment, I literally heard a bell, a single tone of a bell.
Mm-hmm.
And a voice said to me, that's your job.
Oh, you're kidding. Right out. I mean, most people get chills, but you had a voice.
Well, I wasn't hearing it in my ears, but it certainly wasn't my voice and my thought.
The voice.
It just said, that's your job. And part of me was thinking, okay, I haven't even had a drink yet, and I'm hearing voices.
Now, Lisa, you had already made a plea to the universe, and it was answering. You would ask for more single men in your life, right?
Well, that was my joke. Working in theater, and I wanted a job where I could put down roots and meet more single men, and that, you know, be careful what you wish for, because God sent me to a place where all the men are permanently single and celibate.
Yeah, that we know of.
The irony is, I did ask my friend, well, where's the phone number for that job? I called the next day, and they told me the job was filled, but I decided to make a personal retreat at this monastery. And while I was there, I dropped off my resume, and I put a note on the back, I know the job's been filled, but if anything happens, please give me a call.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I once costumed an actor as the Pope. So
you once what?
I once costumed an actor as the Pope.
Okay, yeah, that was straight in the hole, right?
I thought that might give me an in. Well, you know, the Lord works in mysterious ways. Whoever they had hired didn't work out, and they called me.
Mm-hmm.
And
tell them what your audition was. This is great. You had to make one perfect robe, right?
Well, no. I think...
Like Rumpelstiltskin.
No, actually, they took me on a tour of the hill, and the man that would become my boss took me up to this little shop, and he showed me some of the old garments and said, this is what you'd be making. And I said, well, are there any patterns, any manuals? I mean, you've been here for 125 years. You know, where's the pattern? No, they don't have anything. So basically, I started the shop from scratch. There had been a monastic tailor. Back in the old days, they had time to send a brother to study and develop whatever field they needed help in. But that brother had passed away, and another brother that knew how to sew did it part-time, but he couldn't, you know, keep up with the schedule. And then they sent him away to Mexico to their sister house. Mm-hmm. So they had been without new clothes for over 2 years. So my skill as a theatrical costumer, I mean, over the years I'd learned to make anything and to fit anybody. So I developed all the patterns myself and actually wrote a book on how to make a Benedictine habit.
How to help them support their habit.
You wrote a book.
Well, my favorite is the C's motto, a happy habit. So
now,
I tell
Lisa,
them I'm making a happy
they
habit.
They obviously adore you, and I've seen your work. I have watched a priest walk by, and the way the little pleats kick and the perfectly sewn little hood, they really worship your work. But why were you called there on a spiritual level? What has this brought to you as a very outspoken feminist woman there in an all-male environment? Why were you called? Was that part of your spiritual unfolding?
Well, of course, growing up in the same household, you experienced the same things I did. I told the prior, who was my supervisor, and I told the then abbot that you might think you hired me to sew habits, but after being there a few weeks, I realized my true purpose was to resolve the religious conflict that was the one point of contention between my parents. My mother was Catholic, and my father was a Mason who did not like organized religion. So there was some tension in our house growing up.
Oh, yeah. Remember what Dad used to call the turkeys?
Yes.
Bottom.
Okay.
But isn't Masonry an organized religion? In a sense, it's a very organized fraternity.
It's organized along similar lines, I guess you could say.
But the Catholics wiped out.
Well, you know, historically there was conflict.
They burned him on the steps, and he was the leader. Jack D. Molay, he was the leader of Masonic Cathar, that whole world.
What time in history was that?
That was about 1300 A.D. And so there's a huge animosity there. The richness of the ancient alchemical practices in the world, ancient wisdoms from all around the East were carried by these wise beings, and the church, being threatened by the power and information, rounded them up. Actually, they say that a French king wanted the treasures of the Cathars, and so the church colluded and went. So this is all out there in history, and it's all part of,
it was interesting to me that my parents loved each other so much.
That was my question.
Yes, my parents loved each other very much, and I look back and I see the only discomfort between them was religion.
Mm-hmm.
And in my years at the Abbey, I've learned so much. I've spent time reading on my own. I've talked to the brothers. I've read the code that they live by, the rule of St. Benedict,
mm-hmm.
which, gosh, if most people lived the general rules of St. Benedict, the world would be a better place. But
is that similar to St. Francis, I would imagine?
Each monastery has their own mission and their own purpose, each branch.
Mm-hmm.
I work for the Benedictines. And their main purpose is prayer. We also have a seminary on the hilltop where they train the future
mm-hmm.
priests.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sort of, which I found interesting, because here are all these young men coming from all over to be formed as priests. And because of the conflict between my parents, I was uncomfortable with religion most of my life. And I felt here was my opportunity, finally.
For healing, for integration.
Well, to search out my own spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself working for my mother's religion. And a lot of the reading that I did was of alternatives to, you know, classical standard religion, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I had...
Which books were you drawn to at that time? Like The Chalice and the Blade...
I have a whole list of books at home. Of course, now that we're on the radio, I can't think of a single one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, The Chalice and the Blade was good. Ironically, I asked my new employers, I asked the abbot, what is the one book you would give me as someone who's completely ignorant of religion?
And they answered the Da Vinci Code.
No, he gave me a wonderful little book called Catholicism Today. And reading that book made me realize that Catholicism today is very different than it was when I was a little girl growing up in the 50s and 60s doing catechism.
Well, remember that. Yeah.
But I think I've had lots of defining moments over my years there. Most of them, I do feel I have come full circle. I began attending the Unitarian Universalist Church, and I have friends who are Masons. So for me, that little voice at that cocktail party put me in a direction I never would have imagined.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, most of my friends laughed and said, "You at a monastery?" But I followed that gut instinct, and I think I was really meant to follow that.
So it's given you time for reflection, to find your own spiritual path. And what I see, what has flourished out of that, is you've begun writing, which seems to be your core passion. To tell us about how you enjoy writing. Well, in the family emails, you're able to write about the pastoral beauty, the shearing of the sheep up in Silverton, the things that you do with your friends. So now it seems like you've even changed your schedule, so you have a little bit more time for writing. Talk about that process.
Well, even one of the other things I did, of course, I lived in Portland, Oregon, which is a beautiful, wonderful city, but the monastery is an hour from there, so the first 2 years I commuted. And I felt I had to make a choice. Am I going to keep my job and change where I live? Or am I going to change the job? So I decided to move from the big city to a tiny little rural town. And I had another defining moment there. When I was looking for a place to live, I worked with some realtors. And, of course, they want to show you what they've got listed. And I was scanning a newspaper, and I saw this very poorly taken picture of this little place, but for some reason that bad ad caught my eye, and I took one of the brothers.
Bad ad. That's
it was a bad ad. It wasn't going to sell that property. I drove to this property, and I walked onto the property, and I felt something that I'd never felt looking at any of the other properties. My hands sort of trembled, and I felt very excited. There was something that I don't know what it was—a current of energy. There was something about this place that made me feel excited in a very positive and breathless way. And we walked around as far as we could, since there was nobody there and we didn't want to trespass. But just before we left, I looked over, and standing in the shallow creek was a beautiful blue heron. And I felt so thrilled to see that bird. And it took off at that moment. I did eventually move there, and I've seen that heron many times since. But I felt seeing that bird was another message.
I might point out that if you were to visit Lisa, she lives right where two rivers converge. And that flowing, beautiful, nurturing feminine energy, I believe, has been something very cleansing and healing for you, sitting on her deck when the water is full. And she makes me a cup of hot milk, and we put in a handful of chocolate chips. That's about as close to heaven as you get, watching the sun go down and the stars coming out. And people gravitate to her home as a retreat place to go and visit there. Lisa,
well,
it's
definitely a retreat. I think I was led there, literally, because within a couple years I did get cancer. And sitting on that deck, breathing in that oxygenated air that flows over those two beautiful creeks and listening to the rustle of the wind in the trees, that was my healing retreat.
The sounds of nature. That's what our show is about. The sounds of nature, going to that stillness and receiving the healing vibrations. So that sounds to me like that house was waiting there for you.
I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of defining moments again, when you look back on your life,
I think sometimes, as you said earlier, it is the tiniest things that alter your course by half a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first few days and weeks, you don't notice that course change.
Mm-hmm.
But when you reach 10, 15, 20 years ahead, it has made a huge difference in where you've ended up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you told me I'd be working in a monastery, when I was a little teenager,
thing.
I would have...
The last thing. Well, let me fill in a little bit more. Did I say Lisa was a beauty queen? She was a stewardess.
Yes, I fulfilled all the cultural roles.
She had the world
on
a string.
To me.
Until... I remember getting the call. She had another defining moment where she was in a terrific accident. We said, we'll take this call real quick, and we'll come back, and you can talk about that defining moment. Hello?
Lisa thinks it was her.
Do we have a caller? Hi. Lisa, go ahead and speak to... what do you think that was about? We already see how your movement towards the monastery had a sole purpose in that. And that's what I want our listeners to get is that...
Well, I think it's interesting that when I was working in theater, I had this urge to take a year off. And then I ended up in a monastery.
I think you hit a mute button.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's better.
There you go.
I had taken that year off, and then... through synchronicity and serendipity, ended up at a monastery. When I was a flight attendant, I traveled the world and
what airlines?
Learned a lot. It was called World Airways. It was a small airline that, during the time I was there, became bigger.
What's your best story working for the airlines?
Oh, gosh. Well, I could talk for weeks about that. Those were my youthful, juicy years.
Yeah,
yeah, we don't want to go there right now. I want to talk this defining moment. I ended my career with an aircraft accident. It was probably a pretty good accident.
Yeah, you were on TV about it. I mean, you were one of those
well,
mysterious...
Well, this was a long time ago. Our aircraft landed at Boston Airport in January, and the braking conditions were very poor, so our DC-10... slid off the runway, went down an embankment. The rear landing gear embedded into the rocks on the edge of the shore. The front part of the aircraft broke off and went into Boston Harbor. I happened to be sitting in the front part of the aircraft. The interesting thing is, looking back, I had had a couple defining moments that day. Actually before the accident.
Mm-hmm.
When you work in an industry where there can be some danger, you don't focus on it all the time. So all the years I flew, you just don't make jokes about crashing. But that day, I had made two references to crashing. The best example mm-hmm. is one of the gals was having a birthday, so we had a birthday cake back in the galley. And one by one, we would take our turns going back and saying, happy birthday, have a piece of cake. The cake was decorated with a runway and a little plastic airplane.
Oh, I see what's coming here.
no joke. I picked up that plastic airplane and I stuck it nose down at the end of the runway.
Oh, my God.
And I said, look, Lynn, we crashed. And, of course,
yeah.
Within 2 hours, that very thing happened.
Yeah, you should be on the psychic hotline, Lisa.
Well, the last thought I had before the actual impact was, you know, if anything bad happens and I don't die, I'll call my sister Martha and go visit her because she lives here in Boston. And so that came to pass.
There you go.
I would say the Pentagon might be interested in talking to you.
Well, I also think they do those funny things, don't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I also think it was interesting.
Crashing.
I had been investigating other careers while that year as a flight
mm-hmm.
attendant. I was thinking, you know, I've done this for almost 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd like to segue into something else. And before I could make that choice, the divine made it for me.
You were in a holding pattern. And that's what illness often is.
Well,
mm-hmm.
after the accident,
right.
I was forced to take a year off. I was not mm-hmm. physically injured. I had post-trauma syndrome, and now because of the two Gulf Wars, most people are familiar with post-trauma syndrome.
Yeah.
So
I remember what that was like. It was frightening for me to witness the physiological...
Yeah, you witnessed one of my little episodes, didn't you?
Yeah, even as a nurse, it kind of...
That was a defining moment for you to witness my symptoms.
It helped me to see that. But a lot of times we can't make the conscious changes, so the spirit world is making them for us, almost cataclysmic. And a lot of the cancer patients that I've been working with say that cancer was the best thing to happen to them because they had to stop their life, they had to start breathing, they had to start appreciating, and from there they build up their immune system and are able then to go on and to live their more their true lives. So you had that defining moment. You had the monastery defining moment. Now, what's next? Are you waiting for another defining moment, or are you creating and intentionally crafting your life so that you don't have to have that linchpin removed in a dramatic way?
I think that works for a lot of people. The first time, it was thrust upon me. The second time, I got a lot of hints. Which I took and mm-hmm. worked towards something.
Mm-hmm.
This time, I feel a slight pressure now that another change is coming for me. And I almost find myself waiting for that defining moment
mm-hmm.
that will tell me this is the exact path or this is the exact time. What I do find is when I let myself be calm, when I try to make myself quiet, when I still the activities in my life,
mm-hmm.
turn off the TV,
mm-hmm.
cancel some of the appointments,
mm-hmm.
don't eat too much sugar, you know, just be very quiet and wait for that inner direction.
Would you say that that's somewhat of a surrender? That's the tricky part, having the will and courage, but then also simultaneously listening in and surrendering to when, like that message that came to you, yes, this is your job. So that's pretty much your job right now, is to wait for the next defining moment, not push it, not force it?
I don't think you can force anything, but sometimes people will say, there is no luck. You make your own luck by preparing yourself. And then when the right opportunity comes, you can take advantage of it.
Well,
I'm preparing myself in various ways and working towards change.
What comes up for me is sort of the philosophy of Thich Nhat Hanh, which is being present in every moment and being fully aware of the depth and the sort of the layers and connections of every moment. And so it's not that you're waiting per se, you're living fully.
Mm-hmm.
But by being so tuned in, then if it's opportunity or if it's divine intervention, you're more tuned into being aware of it as it comes your way.
Yeah.
And I love that idea of living fully rather than waiting, even though she does seem to know something is coming. But that something will come properly if you are living in your passion, if you are engaged in daily doing things that please you. Creating a beautiful environment, listening to the right music, eating the foods that please your body, being around people who are loving and nurturing, I believe it's like an organic co-creation.
And also she's being of service.
Absolutely.
Well, actually, that's an important point. When I was a flight attendant, it was a wonderful, wonderful job traveling the world and all those experiences, but I had the feeling, you know, anyone could be trained to fill this slot. If I left, they wouldn't notice that Lisa was gone.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went into theater where my technical skills could be used, and I was always employed. My work was always in demand. But even there, after a certain amount of time, the costumes are put into storage, may or may not be used again. And I began to feel, you know, I'm putting all of this energy and effort into creating this beauty. What for? I had a clear feeling that I want to do something more meaningful. And I do believe working at the Abbey has fulfilled that. The garments that I make are one of a kind, custom made, of course, all the men wear the same garment. I get my fun out of custom fitting each little thing down to the tiny detail. And
I was going to ask if somebody could tell a previous tailor's work and your work for the,
yes,
the monks.
Oh, very clearly.
Yes.
And also, you've made beautiful banners with the likeness of St. Teresa. You have made holders for special books that have gone on to the Pope. I mean, your work.
Well, that was for a cardinal. Now we don't want to get the pecking order out of
the Pope.
Well, from time to time, I get to make things that are a little more interesting. But you know, time at a monastery has a different quality. So there's not as much opportunity for personal design work. I get to put a lot of effort and joy into the small details.
Mm.
But my joke was for the monks that it's sort of like sewing a never-ending chorus line, you know?
That's what you needed, a drone for your life, so that you could be...
Well, it was a quiet, contemplative job.
Gentle.
Sometimes I think of myself as Rapunzel. I'm in a white ivory building, way out in the back of the hill, all by myself. I work in solitude.
You're the mother of perpetual... What did you say one time you were? You're the mother of perpetual mending?
Well, I have a little picture on the wall. We worship Our Lady of Perpetual Mending.
But if you decide not to stay there forever, what do you see? You also make extravagantly, profoundly beautiful jewelry with natural stones. You know how to make clothing. You've actually started a little side business of Now I'm Walking Beauty for Women. Tell us about future plans.
Is it important what we wear?
Yes.
I mean, the monks wear a uniform that has a lot of symbology embedded in it. You as a nurse used to wear your white uniform. Policemen wear uniforms.
You know, the monks have it's comfortable.
Yes.
No, the way she makes them.
Well, I've looked for much lighter weight fabric.
Yeah, black wool.
With, you know, technology, polyester wool blends.
So color. You're working with healing in color and fabrics. And
I found that working in theater was so colorful. My home at that time was decorated very bland. Because I work with black fabric in a white painted room, my home now is very colorful.
That's great.
So I would say this is a defining moment. I don't think I've ever been on radio before.
Oh.
Well, wonderful.
How's your life going to change?
Anytime I interact with my sisters, it's an interesting experience.
Life-changing moment.
Well, I was with my older sister, Kristen, this morning and her husband,
mm-hmm.
and I drove from Redding, California, to be with Jan today.
Mm-hmm.
And here's an interesting little thing. Tell me what you think of this. My sister just painted a wall in her house purple, and she has all purple accessories. I put on an outfit that matched her wall completely. I'm wearing purple today. I drive to Santa Rosa. I walk into Jan's house. She's wearing purple, and she's talking to a lady who's wearing purple.
Yep, today was a purple day.
Well, 2,000 years ago, if you weren't of royalty and you were caught wearing purple, you could be executed. So there must be royalty in your lineage.
We're taking our place. Oh, you put your finger right on it. We are definitely royalty, right, Lisa?
Well, I have my old tiara to prove it.
and I followed as well. I was the beauty queen as well. Yeah.
That's right. So, and now we're just a couple of old queens.
No.
That's about 60 miles south of here.
We're just beginning in certain ways. Lisa, you're a fun guest tonight. Fun having my big sister on. And yeah, thank you so much for you said some very wise things. And thank you for sharing your path tonight.
When are you coming back to town again?
Gosh, I don't know.
Well, let us know.
Yeah, well, we would love to catch up. What is the next defining moment? What is next for you? Well, what is next? Coming up, we have a few announcements to make here before we finish. There is a trip to Egypt coming up, sound healing, with two very, very, very experienced leaders. Paul Hubbard is a sound master, PhD in psychology, visionary musician, intuitive channel, has frequently led trips to Egypt, and he is taking a trip on April 26th through May 7th. It's Journey of the Heart, Anchoring World Peace and Harmony, and accompanying him will be Randy Masters, who is a master teacher, composer, harmonic mathematician, sacred geometrist, who has personally studied every inch of the pyramid. So that's a fabulous trip. You can call Paul to get in on that trip. Why don't you go ahead and call him at 512-891-7887. Again, 512-891-7887. Again, I'm Jan Sircone. My website is musicforjoyandhealing.com. Do workshops. I lead toning for women every Tuesday night at my home here in Sonoma County. I'd love to have you come and work with you with sound. I'll be presenting our second workshop in Mysteries of Mary Magdalene, the Inner Harmonic Knowledge and the Goddess Teachings. It's a very profound investigation into the codes. It's the Da Vinci Code. I know that's popular now, but we are going into the real story in working with the sound frequencies. A very profound weekend, December 1st and 2nd, 10 to 6 p.m. Give me a call for that, 707-526-9852. And Matt, before we close, do you have any announcements tonight?
Well, for those of you who live in the Sonoma County area, this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock, I've got some wonderful music in our store, including Stevie Coyle, guitarist for the Waybacks. Those of you who are Waybacks fans, he'll be doing a solo thing here. And the songwriters in the round would include Peter Tracy, Christopher Hansen, and Allegra Broughton of Solidaire. It'll be a wonderful show this coming Sunday. And in 2 weeks, on the 28th, we'll have Lisa Nemzo coming up from Los Angeles to do a show with us. And that's probably enough for tonight.
That's enough for tonight. We'll finish with the last cut on our CD, As Above, So Below. And it's Taua.
Amen.
The oneness of all there is. Good night, Lisa, and thank you, Matt.
Good night, Jan. Nice to meet you, Lisa.
See you next week.
Be here. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.